Welcome to everybody to this Consumer Duty Alliance fireside chat on intergenerational wealth transfers, foreseeable harms and effective continuity plans. I have to say, when we were doing the preparation for today, there was some stunning content. I think you're going to have a really interesting just over 55 minutes with a whole load of information coming at you that is hugely beneficial to financial advisors, a lot of issues to be considering for your clients. Just to set the scene, I'm just gonna go through, there are some learning objectives. So let me just state those, which are: in what circumstances might a client not have the capacity to give instructions to a financial advisor? What action should advisors take to avoid situations where a client may lack the capacity to give them instructions? Is this actually an opportunity to sit down with the next generation? And equally, in all of these things, how can technology help? Now, just before we get into the detail, going to have a small request to you. There is a major survey that we're putting together of advisor technology preferences at the moment over at advisorsoftware.com. And while we're doing this, I'll drop a link to the chat in a moment. Any advisors that haven't completed that, I'll tell you now, it does take about 15 minutes to go through, and you do need to do it in one session, but the feedback will really help us on looking at subjects for these meetings for the next year. So at that point, I'm just going to, you know, talk about today's meetings. We are using Microsoft Teams, which I hope you all know how to use by now. One thing I would ask is, we're primarily listening to our panelists, but we will have time at the end for questions. And please actively put questions in the chat as we are going along. I'll be looking at that chat, perhaps to guide bits of the conversation as we're going through. And I'll be certainly looking to as much as that as we can. And if you put a question in the chat, which we're not able to address during the discussion, our panelists will do their utmost. They can't promise 100%, but we will pass them on and they will do their utmost to come back to you and, you know, give you responses to the questions that you ask. Couple of brief points, thinking about the subject matter. There are various studies, and they're both in the US and very much in the UK as well. There's an awful lot of conversation about intergenerational wealth, but the reality is between 60 and 80%, believing, depending on whose studies you believe, of spouses inheriting money once they're part or controlling the whole estate once their partner passes away, change their financial advisor. So while we're all busy looking at intergenerational wealth, there's a big question to ask around how do we engage with the non-financial partner, if you like. Next, I'm going to come to our panelists. We have Adam Holt from AssetMap, very good friend of mine who I bump into very frequently at US events. He's got a tremendously successful piece of software over there, which helps advisors articulate messages very clearly and concisely. It's like the perfect digital back of a fag packet, if you like. Apologies, Adam. That means different things over here, I should say. back of a cigarette packet. Not that anyone has cigarette packets these days, obviously. But he knows a perfect one-sheet visual reference metaphor, if you like, which has been running, I think, for 15 years in the US, very successfully, like that, yeah. And is now picking up quite a footprint over here. Adam, would you like to tell us a bit more about your background? And then in a moment, I'm going to introduce Al as well.
Sure. No, I've been a financial prep. I joke that I'm a recovering financial planner. I've been a CFP for 20 years and in the business for 25. And as you can read there, I've been in the field as an advisor, helping people with insurance and investments, and built a team of 25 people. And an asset map, as Ian just explained it, literally came out of my practice 15 some years ago. And I showed it at a conference and everybody said, hey, can I have that? So now there's thousands of advisors around the world using it in multiple currencies and languages. And yes, we do support the UK with our South African team, full GDPR experience. And yeah, we're excited to be here. I'm loving to spend some time with you. Thank you.
Great. And from joining us from Manchester, Adam, by the way, is in Philadelphia this morning. So particular thanks to him for it's lunchtime in the UK, but it's 7 a.m. in or thereabouts in Philadelphia, I believe.
Wonderful, cheery morning.
Sounds like a line from Live Aid. Remember that. Anyway, yeah, it was noon in London, 7 a.m. in Philadelphia.
That's right.
Anyway, Al is CEO of Honey Group, who do some tremendous work with financial advisors, helping them really to get to grips with avoiding a range of key challenges. So if I can invite you, Al, just to give your own brief introduction and background.
Sure. So I'm the CEO of Honey Legal. So we're a 14-year-old company. We started the business in 2010. My background prior to that was in corporate sales, working predominantly in the telecommunications industry for companies like MTR, WorldCom, British Telecom. It's a long story how I got into estate planning, but maybe another time. But I got very excited about the fact that, you know, 60% of the population didn't have a will, 95% of the population didn't have powers of attorney. And I was finding it really difficult to find another product where there was an absolute requirement for people to have those documents. And yet there was such a market available, and it was barely being touched. So we've grown the business organically. I'm the founder. We currently have, as you can see, 75,000 clients. Interestingly enough, I'm not financial services background, but we have accumulated £22 billion worth of estate value. And there's many thousands of multimillionaires that, you know, who were involved in our business. And we're not the normal will writing company, as you would imagine. We're very much tech focused. We built our own tech. There's 2 million lines of code in our tech. And I'm excited to be here and share some of the insights.
Great. Thanks very much indeed, Al. So, Adam, can we come back and begin with really, what's the problem? How are clients affected if advisors don't really maximize the opportunity of estate planning? And how can technology help them articulate and tease out those problems?
Well, how are the advisors affected by this conversation, or
how are the clients affected if the advisors don't address it?
Well, I think Alan just shared that. I mean, the enormity of the problem is staggering, and it just continues to surprise me. I actually did estate planning for many years, and I can't tell you how many times both individuals of means, as well as those that are just starting out, had nothing. They had never done any planning. Even in the highest net worth, we actually found that it was even worse. And of course, the problems were massive and they didn't really understand it. So we have a real challenge of literacy in the entire planet around this topic that very few people want to talk about. And all everybody knows that it's a matter of when, not if. So it's an interesting ostrich effect, how people just bury their heads in the sand, and advisors that are not talking about it are leaving their clients exposed massively, if not not towards the tax implications, but also just the inappropriate distribution of those assets as they would have intended. And of course, who suffers is the survivor. So I tend to think about this kind of classic question of are we entertaining this question enough and bringing it up as their best interest advocate? And I think it's a huge responsibility upon the advisor to bring it up, even though it's uncomfortable.
And so What are the tips you would give in terms of actually bringing it up? It is an uncomfortable subject, but what guidance would you give to nudge the client towards reality and the necessity of taking action?
Well, I mean, certainly we can pontificate to every client of, well, when this happens, you're going to pay this, that, and the other, or it's not going to, right? You could scare them. But we find that doesn't often work. One of the things that we've been doing for years is getting permission to ask questions, right? The interesting thing of the effect of asset map, as it were, right? The visual inventory of a financials, all of their financial decisions and the people that matter and the entities they have created and control or benefit from financial instruments, that needs to be transparent to all of us. And we've found that creating an opportunity to have either the clients, our generation clients, and their next generation in the room at some point in time to talk about the inventory and say, this is the stuff we're going to eventually need to transfer you, whatever's left over. How do we want that to happen? And we found that actually just putting the facts in front of people and then just listening and maybe asking a revealing question, what's the plan here, doesn't intimidate in the same way the typical, well, where do you want your money to go when you die? And so a lot of advisors tend to avoid this and still talk about retirement or distribution planning or investment management. Well, that's fun and exciting to talk about, but they either leave off they stop estate planning at the life cover discussion, and then they feel like they've done their job, but never really ask or don't have a way and to facilitate. And it's really cool that Alan's here to facilitate the actual execution of the plan as it's intended, as opposed to just saying, call your barrister and say, hope you figure it out.
But this whole roadmap approach, I've heard asset map described as a treasure map and a way to guide clients through where all the different pots are, look and look at who interacts with them and who they're all relevant to. On this subject of engaging with the next generation, and I, you know, take your point about advisors don't want to have that conversation about, you know, when you get to the end of the day, where does the money want to go? But perhaps if you've got a client who's on a glide path to a good level of retirement, does it actually then work to sort of say to them, okay, fine, we've got you in a good plan to end up in a good place, but if anything happened today, would the money be going to the right places that you want to? And I've heard suggestions in the past that that can be quite a good bridge to engage with the next generation, actually, to sort of, you know, if you've got parents in their maybe late 50s with kids in their mid 20s, they start to have a like, okay, fine, we're really not planning for this, but you need to understand what would happen if.
Yeah. You're right, those questions can work. I would offer a couple questions. So if you're an advisor listening to this, you might want to write these down or think about how they could work. I have typically changed the conversation from not where do you want your money to go, because very often clients need to think on that, and then that becomes a contemplation, and then 5 years later, they maybe come back with an answer. It's already too late in many cases. Instead, I've said, how long do you want your family to wait for their inheritance? 1 month, 6 months, a year, 2 years? How long do you want them to wait? How much taxes do you want them to pay at your passing? How much taxes do you want to pay? And the reason I say it that way is because it forces the brain to say, what do you mean? Why would I want to pay tax? Well, because the current scenario, as I see it in front of me, is that you're going to wait 9 months for your spouse to get the money because you have no power of attorney and you have no documents in order. And it looks like the government's going to, or the attorneys are going to earn at least 100,000 pounds, and hopefully you're okay with that. That's how you planned it, right? And the plan doesn't match the expectation that they don't understand the failure. And I think that there's an opportunity for us to point out our expertise, what I call the original AI advisor intelligence, and apply it to their situation and tell them what the implication will be should they choose to keep their default plan, which is no plan at all. And so that's the reframe how I tend to like to ask that question. And if you feel like that's too aggressive, then I can ask, I will always ask, what's the plan? And part of my duty to you as a best interest advocate, as a fiduciary, please help me understand, looking at your finances in whatever form, balance sheet, asset map, doesn't matter. What's the plan for these assets to transfer? And you just usually find that the clients are like, I don't know that I have a plan. We have avoided it. I really was upset with the way my parents passed assets. We dealt with a bunch of pain there. I don't want to replicate that for my children. What should we do? And that's the tee up for solving the problem.
And this actually comes, doesn't it, into this sort of, go back to the reference to the treasure map, something that the survivors might have to look to is like, ah, okay, here's the guide to where all the bits are.
Nobody remembers what you told them. At the moment in time when you have this event, I don't know if anybody in this call, I apologize and condolences if you've dealt with this intimately, but when you go through an estate and you're on the receiving end, or you're administering it, maybe even worse, and you don't know where anything is, it's brutal. So you're dealing with an emotional experience that's not fun. And now you have to deal with a technical and financial challenge that's just creating enormous weight in the midst of running your own family, if you have one, and your job and such. So I always joke that advisors who allow their clients to not address the estate planning are asking them to ruin their legacy with their family. Because what the family will remember is, boy, dad really didn't think about this stuff and he cost us, you know, and that's how I want to remember my family. No, I want to remember that they thought about me even, you know, post event, right? And that's a great sign of empathy. And I think it's an opportunity to reframe it and tell advisors they can actually be the purveyor of that great goodwill by being empathetic for the next generation's experience.
Thank you for wonderfully teeing me up to bring in Al now, who's going to talk about, yeah, all the documents, you know, we need to have, actually not just post death, but in preparation, powers of attorney, etc. Let's look. Do you want to start off, Al, actually by talking about the situations where, and you gave some fascinating examples when we were talking the other day, of a whole range of different situations where an advisor might be just completely stuck if one partner loses the ability to give instructions.
Yeah, sure. Do you know, the interesting thing is we all look at sort of like post-death documents, we look at wills, but actually what you need to consider is living documents, the documents you need while you're alive, lasting powers of attorney. And we've had so many examples over the years, you know, of people that have fallen foul because they haven't taken that into consideration. One of the things that I mentioned in last time we were speaking was the a rather large equity release company. They insist on having powers of attorney. So people get equity release, they get £100,000 drawdown facility. And it's very rarely that people just draw down the full £100,000 because they've charged interest from the minute they draw it, right? So until they need it, they don't draw it. So they might get the new conservatory, the new car, the boat, or whatever they're going to do. But the majority stays in the account waiting to be drawn down. But if one of them loses capacity in the meantime, they lose the facility to draw down. If they can't sign, they can't draw down the facility. And there's so many scenarios. I mean, for instance, mortgage advisors. If a client can't sign for the paperwork, my mortgage advisor comes to me every single time I get a new mortgage and he said, here's a new rate. It's fantastic, but don't worry. You know, at the end of 2 years, you're going to fall back onto the standard variable rate. But don't worry about that. I'm going to come back in 2 years' time. I'm going to charge you another prop fee and we'll get you another fantastic deal. You know, and I say, brilliant. But, you know, if either myself or my wife lose capacity, we can't sign for another deal. If my rate went on to the standard variable rate right now at the end of my deal, mm-hmm. and it went up 200, 300%, what would be the consequences to me and my family? It'd be absolutely catastrophic. You know, and most people don't realise that. And I don't mean this in a bad way, Ian, but most people are ignorant. They've got no idea of the consequences of not having powers of attorney. Everyone thinks about a will. And even then, even after they thought about it, they still don't do it. But actually, you know, 95% of the population haven't got the powers of attorney in place. And it's Alzheimer's and dementia now. It's taken over cancer as being the biggest killer in the UK. statistically, 50% of the population are going to suffer from that disease. Ian, you're hoping it's going to be me. I hope it's going to be you. Statistically, one of us is going to get it. 50% of your clients are going to suffer from this disease. And the minute they suffer from it, if you don't have the right legal documentation in place, how are you going to manage their affairs? How are you going to control their assets? Because if they don't have those legal documents in place, it could take 9 months now to deal with the Office of the Public Guardian just to try and get access to the products or to get access to the funds again. The consequences could be absolutely catastrophic. And there's the thing now with the FCA on consumer duty that, and treating customers fairly. Are you doing that if you don't make sure that they've got the right legal documents in place? In the old days, it used to be good enough to say, you know what, have you got a will? No, I haven't. Well, you need to think about that. You tick the box and move on. Actually, circumstances today are really quite dire. And, you know, you talk about, you know, involving children, intergenerational wealth planning. These are the perfect documents to get children involved.